Thank you for opening up the toolkit, where we take time to explore the tools that people have used to build their life and careers. I'm your host, Justin Fortier. My guest today is New York City comedian Jared Fried. I started following Jared about 7 years ago when I read an article by him on the website Bro Bible. Over the years, I've certainly enjoyed his podcast, online writing, and social media content. But his live act kept the sold-out room laughing for the full set. You can find him at Jared Fried on Instagram. That's Jared, F-R-E-I-D, on Instagram. From my vantage point, as a loyal follower, I've watched Jared take his Instagram presence from only a couple of thousand followers to 170,000. His podcast has evolved from a special feature on a college news site to a show that has hundreds of thousands of listeners every month and frequents the top 100 comedy podcast. Most recently, he launched a daily show called Fried by Noon that was still in his ideation phase when he mentioned it in the episode. Stay tuned after the interview for my brief analysis of his new venture. What I like about Jared's story and why I want to break it down with him on the toolkit is that he's not an overnight success. There hasn't been a clear big break. Over the course of this episode, he provides a framework that other creatives and entrepreneurs can use when approaching their own projects. I spoke with Jared back in February 2020, in between his shows at the Comedy Store in San Diego. He was incredibly gracious to fit me in on his birthday, and I truly appreciate that his girlfriend Jess, who had flown out from New York, let me steal 45 minutes of his attention. Since the episode was done in the green room, where the comedian waits to go on stage, you'll hear faint sounds of a jazz band kicking in partway through the episode. Luckily, I got the settings right on my microphone, so it's fairly mild. I edited out a few interruptions or times when we got sidetracked chatting with Jess in the room, but left a bit in so you could see Jared's humor shine through. As with every episode, I welcome your email feedback to me at justin@toolkit.fm or on my site, toolkit.fm. A quick warning, this episode has a fair amount of profanity. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Jared Fried. Jared, thanks for coming on, making time on your birthday, no less.
Of course, so, of course. Yeah. Thank you for having me. What's the name of this podcast?
The podcast is called The Toolkit.
The Toolkit.
Yeah, yeah,
that could
yeah.
be so many other types of podcasts. That could be like, you know, like we just, it'd be funny if you came here and you were like, yeah, this is about business and growing your business. And then I find out it's about douchebags across America. It's like, yeah, it's the toolkit. We just unknowingly.
Yeah. It's just a collection of high schoolers just making fun
just
of each other.
Fucking with guys that think that they're helping people with their career. That's cool.
Exactly. Exactly. So this is a big get for me. You were one of the first people I thought of when I started this mainly
Very
because
nice.
I've been watching your journey as a listener starting back from the TFM days
yeah.
when you were posting on Bro Bible and, mm-hmm. and starting to do some of those blogs. So I think that's where I'd like to start if we
okay.
could, just a little bit of when you made the jump from working in insurance to starting being funny for money. What was that process like? So I only kind of saw at the TFM start, but what did it
sure.
look like? What were you doing on the side
well,
to prepare?
It was scary. I'll say this. When I first started, I'm very lucky starting. Like, you know, it's like I was working in life insurance. The best part of my day was writing funny emails to friends. And I was on these big group emails. And, like, I was miserable doing what I was doing. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I spent a lot of time every day thinking, like, what's the thing I want to do? What's the thing? Like, I want to be, you know, I was having trouble, like, waking up in the morning to get to work. And, like, I really wasn't, like, it felt like I was, like, just weighed down. And I was really, and I talked a lot of this about this a lot towards the beginning of when I started stand-up, this whole idea of that, like, 25-year-old, what am I doing age? And I think that's a bigger, it doesn't get enough credit because it's like kind of a luxury problem to be like, oh, boo hoo, you don't like your job. Like go, you know, you have a college education, no debt, like go fuck yourself. So it's like but no one, you know, like what is becoming an adult now? Like, we don't even know anymore. Like, 18, it used to be like you go and become an adult, but now 18, you go to college and you go to this other unreal reality of bubble, you know, in a place where you're very protected. And then you get out and you go to a job that you're not even sure you wanted to have because you started with a major that you didn't even know. So I was like, I spent a lot of time just like, I'm like, I need to find something that like I want to really have like pursue, like where I feel like I'm running towards something. And I just felt like I was kind of treading water. So I was writing funny emails to friends and be like, what's that mean? I'd be on an email with like 10 other people and I would just try and ball bust. And then someone would like write off the email chain, like, hey man, that was the funniest fucking shit I've ever heard. And I was like, that would make me feel good. So I'm like, how do I repeat that? Like, and I think the biggest thing that's helped me through starting, I was like, I want to, like you said, I want to be funny for money. Like, that's really the goal boiled down. And I think that's helped me, like, to be able to, when I was saying that from the beginning. And I remember telling my parents, I'm like, I'm leaving my job. I had savings. I had some bar mitzvah money stacked away. And I knew I could do, like, you know, I could live, you know, fiscally, you know, conservatively. And, like, I could, you know, I kind of did, I did a little bit of the math of, like, what it took to me to live on a daily basis. And I had savings to, like, get to the point of, you know, you're just trying to get to even. Like, you're just trying to get to, like, money in, money out. So I kind of did the math on that where I had time and comfort to be able to do that. And I told my parents, and they were like, my dad right away was like, oh, you want to be one of the guys? At the time, 30 Rock was a big show. He was like, "You, oh, you want to be one of the guys in the writer's room at 30 Rock? You want to be one of those guys, the guy with the weird glasses?" And I go, yeah, Dad, I'm going to go knock at 30 Rock, and I'm going to, they're going to let me in. Like, you know, like, it's not going to be that easy. But he was like, he got that. He got that there was a business element of it. It wasn't just that I was going to go fuck around. And my mom didn't get it because I think moms really enjoy telling their friends what their kids are doing. And I think the easier you make the message, the happier your mom is. So, like, it's really hard. What's the message? Yeah. My son fucking left finance.
Two podcasts.
To do podcasts. Like, shows, also, all, those things, all that shit wasn't even, I took things I learned from selling life insurance, which it was a lot, like how to work, how to be respectful, how to, you know, approach people, how to, and I tried to use that for comedy. And I was like, that was always going to be my advantage, is that I knew, you know, I had this kind of background in like cold calling and hearing no, and knowing that, you know, I think like the life insurance stuff like got me prepared for failure. In a way that I never knew in my other, like, you know, growing up, I grew up in a suburb where you study the material, you get the grade you deserve. It's always that. And then you go to life and it's not that way. So I think doing the life insurance stuff like taught me a little bit about like what's, you know, not everyone's there to help you out, you know?
And so did you start writing and getting things published while you were working at the life insurance, or did you just basically say, I'm going to commit fully?
I'm going to commit fully. I was like, I'm not going to take any, I need to like jump towards this and I need to like sprint, because I'd never done that. Like in my life, like I was always like, I'll study just enough. I'll do just enough to get by. I'll do. That was the thing that made me feel badly. Like, you know, now I'm at a job where I'm like, I want to be successful. I want to do well. And I'm not even here where I want to do everything. I'm just not that good at it. I'm not that passionate for it. It was hard. It was harder to go every day to that job than it is to do this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, yeah, so I started. So my plan was, I knew the internet could help me. So I was like, okay, I started like creating my own jobs, which was really like very helpful. So like every Thursday I had a column out. Every Thursday I was going to post something somewhere. And it started at Weekly World News, where I was giving dating advice. It was called Dude Dating with J Train. And then I went to Bro Bible. And then I started making videos with Bro Bible. And then Bro Bible sends me to like the AVN Awards to like do like these videos. And then Total Frat Move sees those videos. And I noticed that Total Frat Move had a big audience where they were all talking. They were following people from the site. And I was like, okay, that's what I was always my goal. Go be a special funny thing that someone will go, oh, and I would have the byline. The end line was Jared Fried is a New York City comedian. So it was like, it wasn't just some writer on the site. It was trying to let people know, like, No, this is special. You don't get this. This is every Thursday. You're getting a little piece of J-Train. And that was like my goal. And maybe that didn't work for everybody, but it worked for some people. And that was like always. So then, and then that turned into the podcast. And like, you're just looking for more jobs. And I would always just create jobs for myself that if they weren't getting paid, I was getting paid in something. Twitter followers, Instagram followers, experience, getting better. All that stuff mattered to me. And I think when you start something that you don't, that you just want to live it, I think when you want to, like, I wanted to live a life of a comedian. Like, I wanted to go to the, do this club. We're in, you know, we're in La Jolla this weekend. This was the goal, yeah, to go and do La Jolla and have people show up that know me. Yeah. And want to see my jokes. Like, this was always the goal. And it's like every day was doing things to get to this, you know?
Yeah, I found it was interesting that there are some comedians who approach the all stand up all the time. But one reason why I wanted to have you on this is because I saw you really took a business approach to doing it, in terms of you're going to build the podcast elsewhere. And from my perspective, it looks like this is somewhat of your art. Which is it's hard to be an artist, but you really approach some of these other things. So, but while you were developing your comedian route, I've heard you talk about 7 days a week. What does that look like in the city, and where were you kind of modeling? So you did the posting and stuff like that, but what did it look like getting in the clubs, and what sort of responsibility, or I guess role models were you following?
It was hard. It's still hard. Basically, I would wake up every day like I really use my calendar a lot, where it's like, what are the things I need to get done today? What are my shows tonight? In the beginning, it started as I was very interested in learning. I think that's a big thing if you're gonna like start something. So when I first started, I took sketch writing class at UCB. I took improv at Chicago City Limits. I went to a stand-up club and I started asking comics after, is there any comedian here, stand-ups that do, you know, like, that will talk to me for money? I was like, I don't want to take a class for stand-up. I want to talk to a comedian. I want to ask questions that I won't get a lie back. I think a lot of people will live in this, like, they want to hear answers that they want to hear. I was like, just tell me what sucks, which way to go. Don't give me the bullshit of like, go to this and then buy into this. And I got a lot of that through selling life insurance, where it was like, you know, a lot of people just saying to me like, oh, do this for tomorrow. And it's like that bullshit work where I'm like, just say yes or no. I don't want maybes. So I reached out to this stand-up comic who had experience, and I ended up like getting tutoring from him I was basically paying for a friend, you know, to give me advice. So, and it was all in the interest of learning about it, learning about what was going on and what people did. And like, you know, I'll give an example. So there's a thing called, there's open mics, but then there's bringers. Okay. The difference between an open mic and a bringer: open mic, you show up, you put your name on a list. They'll say, buy a drink or pay $5. You go on stage in front of a bunch of miserable comics. That fucking sucks. Okay. Then there's bringers. If I brought five of my friends, then I would go on stage for 5 minutes in front of everyone and five of their friends. So it's a real audience. It's a lot of fun. It's your big night. It's your bar mitzvah, you know? And I was told early on, and people think, well, if I do the bringers, I'm at the clubs and the club will see me and they'll have to book me. That's not how it goes. I would have maybe gone that bringer route, but when I went to people who knew what they were talking about, and I wasn't afraid of hearing the answers that suck to hear. No one wants to hear diet and exercise, but that's the answer. So it's like the answers I got were like, yeah, those bringers are a waste of your time. No one will respect you. No comic will look to like think that you're a good comic. You have to go to the rooms that suck to get better. You have to go to the diet and exercise rooms, not to the, you know, the keto rooms, you know? So it was that's a perfect example of like, okay, I dug into like really looking for mentors, looking for the honest answer that's not always like the fun answer, and then listening, you know? And it's like, you know, because listen, I could have five friends come to my shows for the rest of my life, but they're not going to come to La Jolla. Yeah. Like, they're not going to be here. I'm not going to be. And what are my friends are going to lie to you? Your friends are going to laugh because they know you. You need people that you have no idea from fucking anything to laugh at your jokes. Then they have to laugh right away. So you have to leave those things behind. And like, you know, friends would be like, when can I come? When can I come? I was very protective. You know this from listening to my podcast. Like, the podcast is easy to put out. The columns every week, I could fashion them. I could whittle them down. I knew what I was saying. Stand-up, I didn't put out a lot of stand-up. I waited. I was like, stand-up's my baby. That's my kid. Like, I'm not ready to show that to people. I need to be good enough that they want to come back. I need to be good enough that they want to bring their friends. This is my life. You know, this is an investment forever. You know, and you see that in stand-up. Like, you'll see a lot of people that they'll get into it and they'll go, well, I got my 5 minutes. Get all my friends to come, and all my friends will come see how great I am. It's like, if that's what you're doing, you're doing it. You're not doing it for a career. You're doing it for a one-off. You're doing it to masturbate.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely was able to tell that you were protective of your stand-up.
Yeah,
having those clips online, but you've said yes to a lot of things.
Yeah,
and
I'm a whore.
Thanks for coming on this show.
Sure,
and all the other shows
I'm
you've
here
been
right
on
now,
and the things you've hosted. But now that as you're getting a little bit later and more known, the commenting and replying to everybody's post on Instagram and stuff, I'm sure that's becoming more challenging.
It's getting harder.
Yeah.
It's,
and so how are you able to think about saying no to some things now? Because when you've always been like a yes all the time.
It's hard. It's hard to like, you have to have, I think it's like, I compare this to dating a lot. And the advice I give to dating and people that write into the podcast is like, you have to be okay with that you're a good party. You know, like you have to be, there's a point where you have to go, I'm a good party. I need music. I need food. And you have to take everyone that's coming to your party and go, yeah, I would come. Like, yeah, you have to make decisions. And the decisions have to be right for the time and place of the party. So I hear what you're saying. Like, it's hard because there's so many things. And I think with, you don't want to feel like you said, you gave away the one thing that could have been big for you. But it's like, I always go back to funny for money. What gets me closer to that goal? What gets me better? And what gets me, you know, living, you know, doing the things that I came in wanting to do. Like, you know, there's like right now on my mind is doing a late night set. Like, this is like an example. Doing it, like doing the Tonight Show would be a great thing for me. Doing a different, like one of the Tonight Show is the only one I want to do. I'm being choosy. I'm taking my name out of the running for those other shows, not because I don't think they're great shows, but there's only one that I feel gives me the credibility with my own fans that would be really like amazing and great. I don't think going on the Tonight Show is going to get me a sitcom. I don't think that's going to get me retirement. Like, I don't believe in that. I'm doing it for reasons that I've sussed out that I can see help me to get to the next place that I need to go. And with, especially with the audience that might know me, like, you just came, are you going to the next show or you just came to the last show?
Going to the next show.
So the last show, so many people were there were like, they know me from The Bachelor. They know me from a podcast. Oh, this podcast guy that makes fun of the Bachelor. They don't know me as a stand-up. My goal with that show is they walk away going, wow, this is a guy we should see on Netflix. We got to go to the next show. So it's being able to keep that in mind with every decision, you know, because some things aren't for me, like acting stuff. Like, I get, like, sometimes they'll be like, hey, they want you to come audition for an acting thing. All right, do I want to spend a day learning lines to audition, or do I want to spend a day getting my podcast better and better preparing so that people will love it so much that they can tell a friend? I mean, to me, one's a lottery ticket, one's building a business. To me, you know, so. But to other people, but there's professional actors that are fantastic actors. They would go, I'm not a podcast person. I've worked my whole life to be great at auditioning. It's not a lotto ticket to them. Yeah. So it's different for everybody.
In building the business, I've seen the two platforms, Instagram and podcasting, are really, they seem to be where you're able to hold the most followers right
sure.
now.
Sure.
But you're starting YouTube. What was some of the thought behind that? Obviously early, but adding video to the podcast,
It was all just based on ability. So, like, I think adding video was, like, all a part of, like, having a good studio, having the right people around. Also, for me, like, comedian is a lot of jobs that make up one name. So, like, just like you said, podcast, Instagram, Twitter, stand-up, and then... You know, I did a Snapchat game show. I'm trying to pitch TV shows. I wanted to host non-scripted shows. So to me, when you're doing so many things at once, I'm looking for things that can be repeatable and consistent. I don't want to do a podcast that I have to stop in a month because I don't have time to do it. I don't want to do YouTube that I have to stop a month from now. So the opportunity for YouTube is someone says, okay, we have an opportunity. We can do YouTube videos. And I go... And we tried before. I don't know if you remember, but we tried to make video 5 or 6 years ago, and stopping that is such an embarrassment to me. I'm like, no, I want to be able to walk. I want to be able to walk in, flip a light switch, and be funny on YouTube. How do we make that happen? So I think that's like the reason that I would start now, because, you know, my manager's like, hey, here's how we're going to do it. And then we create a plan. We get ahead. I'll never be in a position. I don't want to take on something that I think people do that with podcasts. They'll be like, we should start a podcast. And then they go, they're good for a month. And they go, well, what do we do now? Let's change it to make it easy. You know, it's like you should be changing your podcast, but at the same time, it's turning the Titanic, not a speedboat.
I had a couple ideas.
Go
there,
for it.
But one of them was turning the podcast. So you took the TFM podcast and it became the J Train mm-hmm. show. And along the way, I think even before, while it was still the TFM, the audience was shifting a little bit. Was that a business decision or just kind of a maturity decision?
You know what it
was?
It was, the opportunity with Total Frat Move, again, funny for money. Okay? So if I always come back to that, I need to put butts in seats. I need followers. So I went to TFM to do that column every week, and they would be like, we'll give you $50 a column. Keep your money. Give me 7 retweets and an Instagram post. That was kind of like, that was my negotiation. Yeah. And it started with Twitter and then it moved to Instagram. So then when I went and visited them, I go, also I want to start a podcast. And they literally looked at me, they go, what's a podcast? And I go, perfect. I'll find a studio. I'll host the show. You guys promote it.
Yeah.
So that was the deal.
Wow.
We just started the podcast as like talking about shit from the site. It tried it, and then I go, hey, and if you have emails, send me your emails. And I gave out my personal email. And the emails were always questions, and they were always advice questions. So you get enough of those, you go, well, this is the show. This is what people are asking for. And then it becomes more me. And then it becomes the reality is TFM goes, well, we want the name back because this isn't even our brand anymore. And I go, you're right. And they also want to start podcasts. They want to, like, you know, they want to feel like they're the celebrity. I get that. You know, like, podcasts become more popular. Now they're like, well, we want to be Rogan. You know, like, I get that. Everyone's got, you know, some ego. And they go, let us get the name. You change the name. You keep the RSS feed. And we'll go be amicable. And it has been. I hear from, you know, Madison every now and again. He's a great guy. Like, I like those guys. We always got along. It was just one of those things where it's like, you got to make decisions. You got to, you know, life changes along the way. The problem is, you know, in 2020, 2015, the changes are more public. It's like, you know, if you and your girlfriend post on Instagram, you got to have your own mini press conference. You know, like, now you're LeBron. So it's, so it turned into an advice show. And then, luckily, women got into podcasting, and that's really where the podcast took off, because it was really a show for women and men, but, like, women love it. And you'll see the audience tonight. It's crazy.
So you used to joke about having two podcasts.
Yes.
As something that to be...
not a little embarrassing.
Yeah, a little embarrassing. Mm. But looking at some of the numbers, I was on... Mohegan Sun's description of you for when you're performing there. And you're the J Train podcast, it was something like 450,000 listeners a month.
Yeah.
That's definitely a different category. So when you started talking about the late night shows, and TV and a sitcom or something like that. But I think about the distribution you're currently getting with this, and even The Bachelor, kind of your live tweets, I'm sure, is beating a large number of shows. Yeah. So do you think that, obviously those are goals you probably had when you started out. Mm. Do you think the landscape's shifting in such a way that those institutions aren't going to be as relevant
it's shifting. You know what? It's like, it's definitely shifting. I've always had like steady growth. Like I've never had that like one viral video that like made me, you know, oh, that's J Train, you know, like never, that never happened for me. I don't know. To me, like, some of these like distribution networks, like they're life changers. I think like I'm chipping away at a mountain, and like they're like, you know, if someone, I would love to be able to blow up what I do for an audience that I can't understand. Yeah, I agree. I'm doing like the things I'm doing get big enough audiences that some TV shows would want. But at the same time, I'm like, I think I would love to have the hand. Like, I would love to have the help. I'm a one-person band right now. And I think, you know, I was just in LA. I'm meeting with all these places. To me, my Instagram, my podcast are all incubators for bigger things. And so that's what I try to sell people on, to be like, hey, get involved with this. Like, look what I do with The Bachelor. Couldn't that be a TV show? Couldn't that be helped out by, you know... And a lot of those, you know, that's all like money stuff. You know, like the answer to all your questions is money. You know, so it's like I have to keep creating stuff, keep making it fresh and new. And again, like with the podcast, like it started as a TFM podcast, became the J Train podcast. Like even now at 35, like I'm a guy with a podcast called J Train, you know, with a nickname I gave myself. You know, that is tongue in cheek, supposed to be, but someone could look at that and go, was he a child? You know, like, I don't know, you know, so I think with those old, I think you need a mix of the old and the new. I think you always have to stay relevant. You always have to be in front of people, showing them I am funny. I am someone you want to tell a friend about. But also I want to be able to like have that thing on TV like that, like can find more people, that gets you a little bit of weight to be able to go on other podcasts because they go, well, he's on E. You know, like
absolutely.
Yeah, so I think that's like more of it. It's less the big break. It's more the like, I need, again, it's like the same thing I said in the beginning, taking some of their people. Yeah. I want to go to TFM and take the guys that have the sense of, you found me in high school. Okay, there was something I did at 27 that you connected with. And it's like, which is great. That's what it's all about. But I want to find more of you. You know, via the next thing.
Yeah. Awesome.
I'm already kind of drunk on one sip of this drink.
They made this way, when you asked for them to make it way stronger.
But why would they? I generally don't drink before shows. Yeah. Once in a blue moon, I will. But it's a celebration. So this is a night. Watch this next show. I'm just crying on stage, like, oh, I don't need you people. One laugh in the back.
you got two for sure. With the institutions, going back to that a little bit, I heard, I think it was Andrew Jenks, one of the recent episodes, he asked you if you'd ever heard somebody call you a funny Oprah before.
Yeah.
Which I got a kick out of. But as I was thinking more about it, I was trying to think of somebody in Oprah started in her 30s of getting kind of her clout. And is there going to be, I guess, Oprahs in the future, do you think? I know this is kind of a
bigger thing. I don't
know.
I think it's a good question. I think, I don't know if, like I have this dream to do a podcast daily. I keep coming back to it. Like, who's going to take over? Like, I guess Rogan has taken over for Howard Stern in a way.
Yeah.
But you can see that that's Rogan's a different show than Stern.
Definitely.
Like, totally different show, but they've taken... But he's the figurehead that Stern was. So it's like, you know, I don't know how it works. I think there's going to be, like, heads of silos. So like Rogan like is ahead of a one information silo, and then you have like, I think there's just going to be like stuff like that. Like I think there'll be like heads of states. It's not going to be one national conversation. It'll be like, you know, a many national, like did you see that article that was like, there was like, it was kind of a negative article about Rogan. It was all about when he had Bernie on the show.
Okay, yeah.
So when he had Bernie on the show and Bernie Sanders, he, you know, gave a quote to Rogan, and then Bernie Sanders' audience was like, well, you don't want to be mixed up with Rogan. He's blank, blank, blank. And it's like, that was just his silo getting entered into by this other silo of Bernie people. So it's like, I don't know if there's an Oprah, but I think there's like multiple mini Oprahs. Because I don't think the whole country will be talking about the same person.
That makes sense. Because when my aunt would talk about Michael Jackson back in the day, obviously he's fantastic, but I wasn't really able to see like a unifying artist emerging even in our time or something like that.
I always
like
think
Justin
of
Bieber. I don't
Bieber,
know.
Bieber, but I always think of... I've said this before and I've been disagreed with. Some have told me this is a stupid thing to say. Not you, but that who's the guy that does
The fact that you can't remember his name means it's not a unifying.
Well, that's what I'm saying. If who's the Hawaiian guy?
Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
Yeah, no, not the Somewhere Over the Rainbow guy. Who's the Hawaiian guy? It's little pop star
Bruno Mars.
He's from Hawaii, right?
I think so.
If he's not from Hawaii, I sound very racist or something. Do I?
No, I think you're on good terms.
Google that. Do you have a phone? I'm not saying. We're sending it. I'm sorry. Yeah, it was a Google.
Yeah.
Bruno Mars. I guess I'm probably the only one in America who's ever been like, the Hawaiian guy. But Bruno Mars is a fantastic artist, okay? Yeah. He's from Hawaii. Thank you. He's from Hawaii, everybody. Please don't cancel me. Bruno Mars, I always wonder if him and Michael Jackson switched eras, would Bruno Mars be Michael Jackson?
Yeah.
You know, I always wonder that. I was told that was stupid.
Bruno Mars wouldn't exist without Michael Jackson's influence.
But wouldn't Michael Jackson exist because Bruno Mars' influence? I'm saying if they switched.
Yeah.
You're because of... What do you always say? Sorry, I'm totally... No, this is fine. You are who you are because of the things that you've done.
Of course, because of the experiences you had in the past that made you who you are today. I agree. But I'm saying, in this hypothetical, Michael Jackson lives during Bruno Mars' time. Bruno Mars lives during Michael Jackson. I wonder if he... Like, because my parents went to a Bruno Mars concert and they were like, this is the most fantastic artist we've ever seen in our entire lives. They thought he was great. And it's like, is he more talented or was the timing better for a Bruno Mars? You know what I mean? For a Michael, do you know what I mean? Like, and we're ignoring all the negative things about Michael Jackson that you have to ignore to have this conversation. But I'm saying Bruno Mars is just, when you talk about segmentation and Oprah versus new Oprah, who's the next Oprah? I kind of think of it that way. Like Bruno Mars doesn't have the same weight that the name Michael Jackson has, but is his talent just as good? I'm one. That's my wonder. Yeah.
Yeah. So switching gears back to, when you're on the road, or I guess how do you develop your material?
So much women. No, I'm kidding.
So many.
Nice. Did you guys meet by commenting on his Instagram and correcting his grammar?
Yeah, correct. No, she would have been blocked right away.
If you're going to cheat, do it.
It's grammatically correct. Yeah. So if I'm on the road.
Yeah. When you're on the road, is that when you develop your material or do you do that when you're back in the city?
It's every day.
Yeah, every day.
So when I go on stage, there's 100 percenters, there's 50 percenters, and there's 0 percenters. So when I go on stage, I know which ones work 100% of the time. I know which ones I'm working on and I'm trying to get to 100%. I know what notes I have in my phone where I'm like, let's see if this works. It's all just levels, and you're trying to like tuck in new stuff between old stuff. You want an audience just to trust you. So when I go on stage tonight, there'll be people that love my stuff. They're in. They trust it. There's someone they brought, your roommate, who's going, well, let's see what this guy's fucking got. you know? So I need to get them both on the same page very quickly. And then I can go into stuff that's like newer, a little bit, you know, more like, I think the hardest thing for me is I host a lot in New York, and I think hosting's a totally different gig. Like, hosting is like getting people on the same page, hearing a joke for the first time. They're not exactly ready to hear you talk about maybe some social issues, maybe something that's a little different, maybe something a little like off the wall. And it's like, so you're just trying to get people prepped to be wanting to hear. And then you're trying to make a set, especially on the road where I'm doing an hour, you want it to have a beginning, middle, and end. So you're working on new stuff to fill in the gaps of the arc a little bit. So it's a lot. It's hard too, cuz I'm not, you know, it's not like I have Netflix being like, "Jared, the special, you tape the special April 5th." They don't say that to me. If I knew the special was April 5th, I could go, here are the 10 jokes I'm going to do, and now I fill in the blanks in between, and I fill this whole thing. It's harder when there's no end date. Like, I have an album out, but, like, even some of the album jokes, I still want to work on those. I still want to make them better. I think there's funnier. I think I'm more evolved as a comedian. Do I leave those because someone at the show has heard the album? Are they going to be disappointed? But if I'm adding new to it, you know, isn't that the goal? So it's tough because there's no right answer. We're all just starting our own thing. Like, the way I do it is different than the way comics that I know and love do it. Yeah. So
in getting material, I've gotten a sense across the board that comics need to be out meeting people. They sure. need to be with the people that they're going to be talking to. Has hosting a podcast where people essentially write in with their problems been good for material, or do you feel like that?
It's good for material because I know what people are really thinking about. So, like, tonight I'll do a whole thing about ghosting. I know that people really fucking care about ghosting. They're really opinionated about it. They're really worried about getting ghosted. So they want solutions to their ghosting issues. So that's something I know is on people's mind. The podcast, and especially people writing about their problems, is a free pass to know what is on people's minds, because they're writing very vulnerable things.
I'm going to jump back for a second to, you mentioned a manager. When did that get involved in the career, and how involved is that in with like the podcast ads or your decision to...
All the like manager agent stuff comes as you're like... You're on the lookout for it, but you're like trying to create a team of people that feel like they're your partner. Yeah. I think that's the biggest thing, where it's like, because the longer I work with my manager, the more we become friends and we lean on each other, and the more it's like business partners.
Yeah.
At first, you know, I mean, I remember when I first started, you'd do a show and someone come up to you and give you their card and then go, "Come meet with me and tell me what you're doing." And then they go, "Well, I could send you out and help you out." But is that a business partner? Is that someone you're going, that you're creating with? I was looking for more of that than the, like, I think everyone's relationship is different with that stuff. I've been very lucky.
Yeah. You've had a couple partnerships that I've seen develop over the last few years. Whether it's opening for Michelle Wolf, the Betches, now Shelby, who's kind of adding on a new level to your podcasting. I guess, how did... We could start with Betches. How did that come about? And
we were introduced by, like, kind of like Jewish geography type stuff, where it was like, "Oh, you got to meet my son. He's putting together shows." And then the son's sister goes to school with them. But... you know, they're in New York, I'm in New York, and they have an amazing platform, but they're also like creating quite like a behemoth, like a media company. And it's like so cool what they're doing. And so the relationship really came over time, where it's like a company like that, like where it starts with three women and then they, you know, hire one other person. They weren't what they are now, where they needed content. They need people to lean on. So I would always send tweets over to them, be like, hey, this felt betchy. And they were always so fair. What I love working with people that say no to you, because the betches were so good about that. They would always go, eh, not for us. But it was never no personal. It wasn't stop texting us. It was always like, nah, that's just not us. And that's totally fine. Like I think what the part that's so hard with this and with dating is, and like with anything where you're trying to have relationships, it's the maybes. It's when someone that doesn't like what you did for them tells you, oh, it was good, and lies to you. You'd rather them go, this just isn't working. You know, so that's always been my relationship with betches, where it's always been so upfront, so honest. I respect how hard they work, and they do too for me. I really do sense that from them. Like, it's very cool what's happened now where we do this podcast together, but it wasn't like designed. It wasn't by design. It was like, hey, it started with me doing their hosting their stand-up shows for brunch, and then turning into the next, you know, sending them a tweet, and then, hey, let me write the Bachelor preview for you. I want to do it from a guy's perspective. And they go, oh, that's a great idea. And it's like, what I've realized is, like, in everything, nobody just helps you. You have to be able to present a value to them, too. It got to go both ways. There's no one-way streets.
Awesome. Yeah, did you ever think that you'd sell out, like, the Betches show in New York, that massive venue, that this kind of, I mean...
It's cool. We did town hall. It was 1,400 people. I guess I never really thought that, you know, that type of stuff. I'm like, I just want it to get bigger. I want it to grow. I want it to get better. I want to come to La Jolla and sell out here. Like, I want, you know, like my comedy, the stuff I do on stage isn't for small audiences. It never has been. It's always been, I want big groups, big laughers, big groups of women coming out together, having fun. Like, I'm not going to teach you anything, you know? So it's like, I like when it's a huge audience, like, and it's like, it's got to keep getting bigger. So that's like what all of this was all about. Like, to me, when a show like that sells out, it's like, of course it should. We put together a great fucking show. So it's like, it's never like, well, what are we going to do now? We got all these people. It's like, we're going to fucking kill it, you know?
So I think I got two left for you.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any bad industry advice you hear about, or even just maybe career advice too in general, but anything you're hearing about people setting out on their own? Or
is there bad advice? I think the...
That you hear often kind of in the industry, or you, maybe mistakes you see people making.
I think anyone needs to be rationally delusional. I think you have to be rational and delusional at the same time. You have to believe. You have to be, you know, you have to go, I want to be funny for money. Someone can always go, well, how funny do you think you are? You know, like, I get that response. I get it. Like, oh, you think you're funny. And it's like, well, I hope to be one day. You know, like, you have to be a little delusional. So, you can hear the show going. No, but I think being rational at the same time is delusional. Like, it's a hard thing, and you have to check yourself, look in the mirror, and yeah, that's a big...
Yeah, awesome. And so the last one I had was, if New York wasn't such a big comedy city, or New York, Chicago, L.A., you've traveled to a bunch of places.
Sure.
Where do you think you'd live if work wasn't attaching you there?
I think New York. Yeah, I like New York. Yeah, I'm very Northeastern. I wouldn't go to Boston, even though I'm from there. I like New York. I like going down an elevator and walking down a cold street and, you know, yeah. Like, that's why I said in the beginning of this show, I'll talk about how you can't complain here. There's nothing to complain about.
Not at all.
It's like, so, I like New York. If I was to pick another city... There's a piece of me that's always like, I want to go to like Montana and just disappear. That's our dream. Yeah.
Helicopter out for a big arena show every couple
just
weeks.
And, how, you know, cool would it be to just be in like a one horse town? There's something to that. I don't know. But my mom, I always used to say that to her when I was younger. I'd be like, I want to get rocking chair out in Montana. And she's like, you would like that. You just don't want to get bothered. And I'm like, yeah, that's what I want. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on. Thanks
thank
for
you for having
time.
Me.
This was awesome. And thank
this is
you.
A pleasure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the peanut gallery.
Thank you for tuning in to another episode of The Toolkit. I truly appreciate you listening. Since recording this episode, Jared launched Freed by Noon, the show that he was considering on our chat. His decision to start the show came as soon as he could see the changing landscape from the coronavirus. This fits with so much of what Jared has done. He has a keen ability to assess the situation, look where he wants to be, and take action to get there. His show launched on both his J-Train podcast feed and his YouTube channel. By Noon is a reference to his family saying of beach by noon, a priority on family vacations, but also provides a clear sense of accountability. This was just another example of Jared giving himself a job to structure the life of a comedian. It's incredibly difficult to have well-made plans and income streams disrupted for months at a time, but he pushed ahead into this new reality without hesitation. Jared demonstrates the power of consistency. It starts with being honest about what you need and what it costs to sustain a project. Jared's story doesn't suggest that efforts must be Herculean. Instead, he demonstrates how focused, manageable, and relentless work yields results. Thanks again for listening. If you want to reach out, find me at JustinP40er on Twitter or justin@toolkit.fm.
Please follow on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.